Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I am not Lee White, but I am Will Terry.
That's right.
And Lee White's not with us on this one, but all three of us are professional illustrators, and we've illustrated books for just about every publisher in the business. Together, we've published about 75 books, and we've all taught illustration at universities.
That's right. And each week we usually take questions, but this week we are interviewing an illustrator, Cam Kendall. Lee White couldn't join us. He's on assignment. He'll be back next week for sure. So it's me and Will talking to Cam Kendall, and we just got done talking with him. This interview was fascinating. And there's a handful of things that I pulled from it that I really either backed up what I already believed or were a couple of aha moments as well. I don't know. Did you get anything from this?
I didn't get anything from it. No. The neat thing was I learned things that I didn't know about him before. But he's a fascinating person, and I think that everyone that's interested in our podcast will find something that they love.
Yeah. Just a little introduction so you kind of get some context here. Cam Kendall is like a working illustrator in Utah. He's a family man, as he gets into in our video. But he's been working on all different kinds of projects, from board games, board game design, illustration for board games, to the illustrator for like the popular Fart Quest books that have been coming out from Roaring Brook Press. He is the creator of Choose Your Gnome Adventure, which is like a personal project that he had been doing. It's kind of on hiatus right now, but is this really cool interactive like adventure comic where his patrons would be able to choose what happens to the gnome on the next, you know, in the next panel or the next segment of the story. So really cool. Some interesting things that I pulled from. I was taking notes, and we learn the importance of like living a well-balanced and rounded life. Like that's key in Cam's like approach to, I guess, being a professional illustrator. It's not, you know, it's not all work and no play. There's balance there. One thing that I thought was really cool, Will, was he gets into how he had to do all these dental drawings, mm-hmm. right? And like it was this kind of a crappy job, but nonetheless an illustration job. And essentially he had to do like whiteboard drawings for dentists. And the thing that he learned from doing that, I think, is kind of like every working professional illustrator I know has to go through something like that, that kind mm-hmm. of like trains them and forms habits, you know, positive habits in their life. I also liked, I think the key to his success is desperation. You know, he gets into that, which is really interesting. And we actually talk a little bit about violence in media. And I guess the ethics behind, you know, how much violence or using violence to tell a story, which I thought was interesting. I didn't expect the conversation to go there. And then we sort of wrap things up with talking actual numbers for what he's been paid for certain projects, which it was really good. And I just realized there was a question I was going to ask him that I forgot to ask.
That was my fault. I came in with a question and knocked it right out.
What was your question?
I don't know. One of the ones that just probably made you lose your train of thought.
Oh, okay. My question was, he briefly mentioned that he got an agent. And I know, like, everybody asks all the time, how do you get an agent? How do you get an agent? And I was going to ask him, how do you get an agent? But then we got talking about how much he got paid, and I forgot. So my apologies as a bad interviewer that I forgot to do that important question, but I won't forget it next time we have someone on. And I think that's it. Without further ado, here is Cam Kendall. Cam, so good to have you here with us. I want to know, first off, what are you working on right now?
Oh, what am I not working on?
Like, what's on your plate?
What's on my plate right now? I'm finishing up a board game.
Four.
Can't say.
Okay. Oh, a lot of NDA stuff that. Happening going yeah. on here.
Finishing up a board game. Then I'll be moving on to finishing up the fourth Fart Quest book.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that again? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, you did. Fart Quest.
Okay.
Yeah. Book four. So I'm in the middle of that book. Sketches are all approved. So I'm just doing final art for that. And then.
Who's that for?
That is with Macmillan Roaring Book Press.
Okay.
Written by Aaron Reynolds.
It's Let's a see. Legit. After that,
I Ryan will... Reynolds' brother or something?
Oh, probably. Yeah. I think that's how that works.
It's a legit book. My. My kid, my 12-year-old, loves those books. Absolutely loves them. He's like, when's the next one, Dad? Come on, September. You know Cam. When's the next one?
It's this very month. That's when book three comes out.
Book three, okay. He's been waiting. They're sitting, like, out. You know, we have a ton of books around, but those books are, like, sitting out off the bookshelf. So I know he's, like, wondering.
Aaron's a great writer. Very, very talented writer. So if you haven't read it yourself, it is, it's an enjoyable read. I think the title's a little deceptive. It feels like it's going to be just filled with potty humor, but it's more of just a title.
It's high class.
Before you move on, to the, whatever else you're working on, go into a little bit more what Fart Quest is like, what's your job as an illustrator for that book and how'd you get it and how'd you, like, why'd you decide to say yes to a book called Fart Quest?
That's the ultimate question.
Yes.
So what's my job as an illustrator?
I mean, on this particular project.
Yeah.
Like, is it
okay. Yeah, each book has about 100
our listeners,
black and white.
Our listeners can catch up. They can keep up with what we're talking about here. They know a little bit about illustration.
Okay.
It'll be fine.
So each book has had a bit over 100 black and white interior illustrations. So I do those. I'll do the cover. I designed the initial logo for the book. And so lots of character design when new characters are introduced. Typically how it goes, Aaron will send a manuscript with a flag for each piece of art that he wants in the book with a little description of what it should portray. Mm-hmm. And then I'll sketch that out however I see fit, send it back, and then they'll review it. Sometimes they'll kind of compile it first with text with the sketches and then see how that's all working out. And then give me any feedback and I then come back with the final art.
And then you're like, there's a character design phase and you're having to get approvals on characters, right?
Only on the initial main characters. So with book one, I did a lineup of the main characters and then they kind of gave feedback on what they had in mind to make sure it was in line with what he was envisioning. And then from that point, I'd say most of the character design is done just on the page. As I'm doing the illustration. So for side characters, you know, I try to keep it fresh and original for each character. But I don't think too hard.
I see. So you're not like creating a model sheet for the character,
no.
Like front view, side view, back view.
No.
And are those side characters, do they ever show up again? Or is it usually just like one and done?
Oh, let me think. Yeah, a few have come back in other books, but each book takes place in a pretty unique setting. So there's a lot of fresh characters in each book. But occasionally, like book four has some callbacks to book one. So some characters I didn't know I'd be drawing again, now I'm drawing again.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, like when Aaron sees the work that you submit, does that influence the story at all or future stories?
It does. I guess after I was signed on as the artist, he went and looked on my Instagram and then actually started pulling up art that he liked And some of that art then inspired where he went with future stories. Just looking at what I tend to draw, what I enjoy drawing, he let that guide some of his story choices. Like the third book has gnomes in it, which I draw a lot of gnomes.
Right.
Is that where he found, like, how you got the gig originally? Is because he found your Instagram?
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know if he found the Instagram or if the publisher found it. It's a good question.
Who's your editor?
Editor is Connie. I'm going to mispronounce her last name. H-S-U. There you go.
Shu.
Is it Shu?
That's how I pronounced it.
Okay. I thought it was like Sue.
Maybe.
You're probably right.
Maybe. She's super cool. She was my editor on Little Bot and Sparrow.
Oh.
So
twinners.
I've had lots of phone calls with her and a couple in-person meetings with her as well, which were cool.
Well, I'm a recluse. I don't meet with anybody.
So you're going back to this job, like it's each book is 100 illustrations.
Yeah, it's like 110 typically.
Wow.
And so this isn't like a typical middle grade novel. It definitely leans closer to a graphic novel. Some of the pages will actually be in a comic layout.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's really cool. And is that something that like the writer specifically asked for, or is that you like riffing like, oh, I think this would work better as like sequential art?
It's a little bit of both. Sometimes he'll specifically say this would be a great scene to put in a comic layout. And then other ones, I want to show a little bit more of the action or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Are you working primarily with like an art director, or is the editor having notes on your work, or is it, or do you feel like you've got a lot of free reign?
I have a lot of free reign, but I do work. It seems like there's a bit of approval from the art director and the editor and Aaron himself. So there's a little bit of back and forth, but this is a great project because I feel like they didn't hire me to fulfill some other idea they had in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they hired me with me in mind and were really excited to go with the direction I
went. So you had to say yes to this project.
I guess. I don't know.
they didn't make that
clear in the beginning, but
you will say yes.
Yeah, you asked why I said yes to a book called Fart Quest, right?
Yeah.
I just read the first page that they had sent me, and it seemed really clear that this was the sort of stuff I like drawing. So it's really, it's kind of a riff off of Dungeons and Dragons. The author is really big into Dungeons and Dragons, and that had a huge impact on him as a kid. And so this is kind of his love letter to that game. And while I don't play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons, I did more as a kid and a little bit as an adult. And just fantasy in general is kind of my, you know, my peanut butter and jelly.
You were a perfect match.
Right. Because you had been doing, you did the Dungeons and Dragons thing card set prior to this. Did they see that before you got this job, or did that have anything to do with it?
I know the author hadn't seen that before. I don't know if the publisher had or not. But I mean, you know, I share some of that art online as I'm working on projects. And so a lot of the projects I get are fantasy in their setting. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where what you do is what you'll do. So, as I'm illustrating a lot of fantastical fantasy setting things, then I get more jobs in that same sort of genre.
So I want to ask you specifically on Fart Quest, it's black and white. You typically do color stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like that's limited you, or has that given you more space for creativity? Do you like working in black and white?
I do, you know, at first I was a little uncomfortable with it because I really do work in color a lot. But it kind of freed me up. I found myself getting a little more loose and a little more splattery. And I don't know, I found that there was more energy in my art in black and white than there was in color. Mm-hmm. And that has kind of translated into some of my colored art now.
Oh, so, like how would you say?
Like I'm just a little less, what's the word? I'm less tight in my art. Like, mm-hmm. I'm okay with putting an outline around a character, even though that doesn't exist in the real world. Like, you know, like mm-hmm. to pop, make them pop off of a background, just putting a little bit of white around that character. You know, that's not realism or anywhere near it. You know, or putting more speed lines or just more ink work. And I've started using some of those same elements in other work.
I don't know. You should see Jake run. He's pretty fast. He gets these little speed lines.
That's funny. So
are we going to talk about the backstory of Cam Kendall?
We'll get there. I want to just follow this. We'll come back to that. I want to follow this FartQuest rabbit hole back because I'm really interested. So these are digital illustrations. They're black and white, but mm-hmm. but they are digital. Or are you working traditionally scanning those digital. In? Okay. So tell us a little bit about that. Like, how do you do that?
I'm using Clip Studio Paint. And it's either on an iPad or on my Wacom Cintiq. Just depending on how I feel. Like either one works. It's just if I feel like sitting at my desk and using the monitor, or if I feel like sitting at my desk and using the iPad, or if I want to sit in a chair or something.
That's interesting.
That's the cool thing about Clip Studio is it is the exact same program, both on a desktop and on an iPad. Mm, yeah. So I really enjoy using that.
Is that why you use Clip Studio?
That, and I really love the... their brushes. So specifically like line work, uh-huh. I feel is really crisp, in Clip Studio. I used to use Photoshop a lot in the beginning and I just felt like there was always some kind of, I don't know, quality gumminess to the line that was, that just wasn't quite clean enough. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want clean art, but I want what I'm doing to look like it actually happened. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe that.
I'm really getting the nitty gritty here, but like, what size resolution do you do your illustrations? Are they like, are you working 300 DPI or are you going bigger and like they're getting shrunk down?
I tend to go somewhere between 350 and 400. I know that's overkill for what needs to be printed, but it allows me to. If they need to blow it up a little bit, mm-hmm. then they've got a little bit of wiggle room. Yeah. So I just like giving them that, you know, safety zone.
You don't want your images looking blurry.
Right. Yeah. So I'm just, I just create a file that is the size of their page. You know, I ask them, you know, what are the dimensions of this book? Then I'll create the file in that dimension with a little mm-hmm. bit of bleed room added to it, and then I'll bump it up to 350, 400. So they have extra room to enlarge if needed.
That's interesting. That's cool. That's what I do too. I'm in that 400 mm-hmm. range. Sometimes it'll be like a 600. I'll even go that big. But that's usually for like covers. Cause if I like want to do a poster version of it or something like that.
Oh, hey, that's pretty smart. Think about that.
You know, if you're at a convention, you want to do prints or.
Yeah, Cam, I go 900 sometimes.
Oh. So,
Well, I may have misspoke there. Did I say 600? I meant 1200. I'm always doing 1200.
I think that's
even
what I heard.
For like, just messing around. I want to ask you about. Since we're going down this rabbit hole of like production, I want to mm-hmm. ask you about like project management. Like, what's your timeline for a project like this? 100 illustrations. That includes like a cover illustration too. Like, how much time do you have? And like, how do you fold that into your day?
You ready? for my secret.
Whoa. Whoa.
This is my secret. Okay, here's Fart Quest 3.
Okay, if you're watching this on YouTube, he's holding
you
up.
You got to go to YouTube to see this.
So this is a piece of paper with a grid printed on it. And I have...
Oh my gosh, that's scary.
Each section of the grid is for one illustration, right? So it's numbered 1 to 110. And then I have a little room for the cover down there.
And then each square, there's four squares for each illustration.
You're like a scientist with
this. Yeah, each square represents... the first square is... The column of squares is sketch, and then ink, and then values, and then upload.
Oh, because it's not done if it's not done uploaded.
Until it's uploaded, right?
That's right.
So I got to make sure I remember to do that.
Hold it up again. I want to look at that a little closer. Yeah.
So what I've done is I've actually made a template. This is just an 11 by 17, and then I'll print off so that I can do multiple projects on one paper.
Oh,
just
nice.
Fold it in fourths. And then what I enjoy about it is when I've completed a step, I'll put the date I completed it or the date I worked on it and fill it in. And that allows me to then go back for future projects. You know, if somebody comes with a similar project, says how fast can you get this done? What, you know, what's the budget or whatever? I have real empirical data to give me comfortable...
These 100 illustrations took me, 100 days. How many days does a book take you?
Let's see. Usually I'll go back afterwards and actually write down. Here I have written 79 days from start to finish.
Wow.
So sketching, inking, doing the cover.
Do you work weekends?
No.
Is this a strict thing? Like, yeah. I will not work Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. Saturday's I don't work Saturday family. Or Sunday. Yeah. You know, I feel like if you're going to do well in business, you have to be doing well emotionally in life.
How'd you come to that?
Everything's
Daniel, play some sentimental music right here. Keep going.
Yeah. So... No, really, though, I feel like for me to succeed in a career, I have to succeed in a family. I have to succeed as a person. I have to succeed emotionally, spiritually, physically, all of those things really I have found tie together.
Right.
If I'm physically unwell, I'm not going to perform well in my career. If I'm emotionally unwell, my career is going to take a hit as well.
That's cool. So let me ask you then, what is a sort of your daily routine and like your weekly routine? Do you have like set habits or set schedules that you do, or is it pretty loose?
It's pretty loose. And this is why, if I'm the sort of person that if I plan too far ahead, I can get a little overwhelmed by it. So I will kind of map out, my weekly routine is get up at some time Monday through Friday and work on that day and be done by 5 for sure. So 5 is a cutoff time for me. When I actually start kind of depends on what I have scheduled for that day. So it's a little flexible. But I do try and specifically schedule out what I need to get done on a certain day. So like when I have this project, for example, I will write in here. Did I write on here? I usually will give myself a goal of some kind, like this many sketches per day. You know, I'll look out. I have this many sketches I need to get done. So 110 for Fart Quest 3. And I have a deadline of this day. So I need to check off this many boxes at least that day. So as long as I'm keeping up with the cubes, filling out those cubes, then I'm good.
How do you manage like creative time with like administrative time? Cause there's emails, there's client calls, there's stuff like that. Is it just again, pretty loose, or do you specifically devote certain time to certain things?
You know, it is pretty loose. There have been times where I have specifically said I'll answer emails first, or I'll do it after lunch or whatever. And I've set specific time for each thing. But nowadays, I feel like I'm a little more productive. And so I don't have to use that quite as much as I used to get myself to get the work done. So it's pretty loose depending on the day. I'm a huge proponent of cubes that I will check off or fill out. So a lot of days I'll start by just making a list of the things I need to get done that day. And then I'll start with what I feel is the most important, not necessarily the most urgent thing, but the most important thing. Because if I get done with what's most important that day, the urgent things will get done because they're urgent.
You know? That's incredible. That's really good advice. So what's the difference between a an urgent and an important thing? Like, tell me what an urgent thing is and tell me what an important thing is.
Urgent thing is like taking out the trash on Monday, right? This is like a mundane example, daily life instead of business example, but that needs to be done. Or emptying my garbage can is an urgent thing. It needs to be done. I don't want to be living in garbage. But an important thing is taking care of myself physically or spending time with my family, you know?
So what do you do to take care of yourself physically?
Oh, it's pretty simple. I just do like 10 push-ups every day. I try and get enough sleep. I try and keep a consistent sleep schedule where I'm getting to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time every day. A few push-ups. I try and eat healthy. I feel like that has had the biggest impact on me physically. It's just what I eat. That's like a huge impact. And then we're pretty active as a family. No, we're pretty active. So we'll, on weekends or on in the evenings, we'll go out in the mountains and hike on a trail or something.
Oh, cool.
I feel like just staying active in general does a lot.
How many kids do you have?
I have 4 kids. Oldest is 15 now.
Dang.
And the youngest is 8. Yeah.
Wow.
I guess they would be that old now.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in like 5 years.
Yeah. Both of you left the miraculous promised land of Utah.
I know. I miss it.
Too bad.
I miss it. Yeah.
Yeah. We miss you. Well, can we jump back into some of the backstory now?
Yeah. I'm curious where this all started. Like, how did Cam Kendall get to be like the illustrator that he is now?
Would you want my personal or our connection backstory?
Let's start there. Let me paint a picture. I'm teaching at UVU, and this quiet kid enters the classroom, and there was a hush. I remember when you walked in the first day.
<What's there>?
No. No, you were one of the kids who blended in, and I didn't notice you until we started turning in work. Because you don't make a lot of noise.
I'm there.
You know, it's funny because I can't remember if I've talked about this on the podcast before, but there are always one or two students every semester that would come to me and say, hey, I want you to know that I am going to work really hard in this class and you're going to be really proud of me. And what I've come to realize is that's code for I've never worked hard before and I'm scared that I'm going to not work hard again and I'm going to let you down. But if I tell you that I'm not going to let you down, then maybe I will actually psych myself into working hard. Which never happens. And so those are the students that don't pan out.
That's a thing. Like if we're so afraid of proving that we are something, it's usually because we're afraid that we're not.
That's right. So you were one of the quiet ones. So that was a feather in your cap right from the beginning. And then you started turning in work and I was like, oh, this guy's got some neat things happening. I do remember that you, I felt like you had a natural sense of design. And I felt like that coupled with the fact that you would listen to what I, you know, and I was a crappy teacher back then. So I gave you some pointers and you did them, you know, you and, you know, your work improved and and you weren't the best, but you were just right under, you were right in there in the solid group in the class. And I was like, this kid could do some pretty good stuff if he keeps going. And turns out, of all the students that I've taught, you're probably one of the most, if not the most successful. So,
woo.
So there you
so
go.
So how does a average, thanks, Will, you know, maybe even poor student turn into a successful? No, giving a hard time. But I'm curious, like, from your perspective, how was Will as a teacher?
Oh, no.
Oh, he was great. Really
great. Those were the early days.
Well, I feel like Will was good at giving art critiques, but he was really good at talking about the business of making art. And I had you as a teacher more than anybody else. Like, the secret is I was never in the illustration program at UVU. I was sneaking my way into illustration classes because of you. Do you want to hear this backstory?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know this.
Okay. So I first went to school for audio engineering. I wanted to record music and, like, do sound work. Mm-hmm. And then I decided I didn't. So I was working at a Blue Table painting, which was a miniature painting studio. We paint miniatures for war games and tabletop games, stuff like that. Mm. And one of the people there that I was training to paint, he was telling me about the illustration program at UVU. Told me that there was a new class for children's book illustration. And I was like, oh, that sounds kind of interesting. I might want to do that. And so I looked it up. I was just transitioning over to art instead of audio. And you were teaching it, and I looked at these at the requirements, and I didn't meet the prereqs. So he said, oh, well, I'm going to go talk to the teacher. Just come with me, and he'll probably let you get in. So before the class ever started, I just went there one day with him. He introduced me. So this is completely forgettable.
I don't remember this.
Sure, because I probably just came in and stood there. And he was like, hey, this is Cam.
Awkward stare thing.
Yeah, probably. And he's like, he'd like to be in children's book illustration, but
who
he'll
was
need your
the
approval.
Guy? Who was the other student?
Aaron
Webb.
Yes.
No. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So cool. You signed a paper to let me get into that class, and because you let me into that class, that gave me the prereqs for multiple other classes that I shouldn't have been able to take.
Oh, neat. I love it.
So yeah, you were really good at teaching the business principles, which then gave me the confidence to quit school when I only had an associate's degree and then just start doing it as a business.
That's awesome. Talk about that. Like, that's pretty gutsy to be like, you know, I'm just going to go do illustration right now. I'm not even going to try to transfer to BYU and get on over there and get a 4-year or whatever people do. And I know there's a lot of, like, UVUers who try to get into BYU and finish out their thing like that. Or you could finish at UVU now, because
I could have
state college.
I could have, when I was there, if I had applied to get into the illustration program, then I could have gotten a full 4-year degree.
What made you think you could just stop school and go do illustration?
Naivete. That's the truth of it, honestly.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was naive. It worked out in the end, but it is not the path I would recommend.
So tell us your path, and then I want to hear the path you would recommend. But what was your path?
My path was in 2013, I quit my job and I quit school. And then I started doing illustration full time. Although it's kind of this weird thing. I quit my job and I quit school, and I was thinking I would do illustration, but I also wanted to make my own tabletop war games. I wanted to, since I had been doing a lot of that for my job previously, painting, that I wanted to make my own setting. And through that, I just found out that what I really loved was world building. And so being an illustrator was just as good of a fit, if not better, because I wouldn't have to do all this stock management and production and all that. So anyway, 2013, I start doing that. And I do a few little illustration jobs for a friend for his Kickstarter. And I make no money for like a year. And it really, it's a story of privilege. So both my parents and my wife's parents are able to help us out financially for like 6 years while I slowly get more client work until I can finally support us fully. That's the honesty of it. And a huge, huge benefit was my father, who was retired at the time, but previously had owned his own advertising agency. And so when he retired and when I started doing this, he sent out an email to everyone he had ever worked for saying, if you need illustration work, contact my son here. And that led to my first like steady work, which was doing whiteboard videos.
Oh yeah. I remember that.
I was doing a lot of that, and it was all of it was dental themed. It was like all dentists. I'm always drawing dentures and people sitting in chairs. It was,
dentists. Well, they have the money and they have the, you know, the means by which to need that kind of thing. Right.
Yeah. So that was my path. It was completely reliant on other people, you know, for financial support and also for getting client work. And then after I'd done that for a while, and meanwhile, I'm drawing things for myself and putting it on Instagram and on Twitter and Tumblr at the time and Facebook. I don't use either of those two now, but doing that, doing a little web comic on the side because I had plenty of time to do all of that, you know, and sharing that work over the years then led to actual work.
Interesting.
That's great.
So, what was it? When did that shift from, now I'm sort of standing on my own two feet versus, you know, waiting for sort of that big break? Was there like a big break or was it a series of small breaks?
I think it's always a series of small breaks. You know, a wall is built one brick at a time. You can't just suddenly plunk all the bricks down. So each thing I did was important. The very first job I ever did for the friend for Kickstarter was a board game. And that led to other board game work, which is easily half of the work I do now, is art for board games.
Wow.
So, you know, had I not done that, it wouldn't have led to where what I'm doing now.
Right. And then and then like you were saying earlier, like, oh, this guy does fantasy stuff. I've got a fantasy book. Let's ask him.
Yeah.
Dungeons and Dragons reaches out. And
like, all the dental work I was doing, it was painful and unenjoyable at the time, but it forced me to draw repeatedly day after day, drawing things I wasn't comfortable with, which was human beings. Like I was all happy drawing creatures and cute little animals and stuff like that. And that's what I would mostly try and get away with. But then I was suddenly confronted with a bunch of people that needed to semi-resemble people. And that is where I then began developing my actual artistic ability. You know, I think I feel like what you were saying, Will, is a good reflection. I felt like I had a good design sense. I grew up with a father who did advertising, which meant I had a computer at home that had Photoshop. And that was just interesting to me. So I got on the computer and played around on Photoshop a lot, you know, just like designing album covers or a weird poster or whatever I wanted to do, but it wasn't a lot of drawing necessarily, but it was designing. And so that, and watching how my father would design ads, I had a few brothers who would get into animation in school and different things that were design oriented. And so all of that kind of really led me to have, I guess, a designer's eye. But I didn't have that artistic ability until I was forced to do it every day for a long time. So, you know, somebody who's maybe more even more dedicated, more focused, could be in school and really put in the time and develop their artistic ability far more than I had. You know, they could have done the work that I did after school, during school, mm-hmm. and then be at a better starting point.
So did go ahead, Will.
I was going to ask, did you give yourself any kind of an out? Like, what if this whole thing didn't work? What else would you have done? And the reason that I ask that is because you seem so driven right from the beginning. I wonder what your thoughts were.
Yeah, it's interesting. You say driven. I felt desperate. It had to work.
See, that's how I was.
It needed to work.
Yeah, that's how I was. And I saw a lot of myself in you, in the way that you attacked in the beginning. But did you ever consider any other career?
You know, I joke that I would be happy being a plumber, and I probably would be happy being a plumber. I enjoy doing that in my own home, working on pipes or electrical stuff or whatever. I like that. But I'm doing this and it allows me to do what I ultimately want to do, which is provide for my family. That's really why I'm doing illustration, is because I want them to have what they need. So it's kind of a I don't know, maybe it's a faux pas. There's probably a lot of artists out there going like, this guy's not a real artist. Because I would probably be happy not doing illustration full time. If I were doing something else and it were providing for my family, I'd probably be fine. But in the moment when I chose to do this, I needed it to work. It just, the more I was doing it, the longer I was working at it, the more it felt like I really can't afford to just throw this all away and do something else. But my wife and I did come up with this limit. We said 7 years, this needs to work. We'll give it 7 years, because anything is going to take time really to build, right. You know, and I hadn't done any building before that. I went to school, but nobody in the world knew me as an illustrator. Nobody. So it was really naive for me to quit and be like, I can make it, I can do this right now and make a whole bunch of money. That was a stupid idea. Like, I should have been making, connections and getting to know people in that industry before I then jumped into it.
Right. You should have had like 5 jobs lined up and
yeah,
you know, kind of like a runway of 6 months of income, stuff like that. Like,
but I do love that you had a limit, you know, a 7-year goal. I think so many people, I'll have students tell me, you know, I need to start making money at this in a year or two. And I'm thinking, you know, if you analyzed every successful illustrator, you analyzed their career, a lot of them, it took a lot longer than that. You know, it took a lot longer than a year or two to start being profitable. And they have thriving careers today. And it's... You start to imagine, well, what if some of those people with thriving careers gave it a year and then gave up or two, you know, because it's not making enough money. And so it's a tough thing to try to make it in this business. But when you do, there's a really rewarding career, a really, you know, pinch yourself to get up in the morning and be able to create for a living type of a career. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like anything is going to take time to build up, right? And you can either put in that work after hours while you're working some other job and still put in years of work for it to finally pay off in the end. Or if you're privileged, like I was in that setting with parental help and financial assistance, you can just quit your job and then take 7 years to build it up. Because that is really what it took.
Do you feel like there was like family members eye rolling and like, oh, Cam trying to be an illustrator?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Not in a doubtful, hateful way, but just in a, oh, there he goes again. There he goes. Yeah.
Do Do you think you could have done it without the help?
No, I would have been homeless. Like, wow. Legit. If I had not had family that could financially help me, and I kept trying to do what I was doing, we would have been kicked out of our home.
So mm-hmm. then what would you say to the person who's got a job, who's trying to get to where you are? You know, they've got a, let's say they're working at Home Depot or someplace, you know, during the day and trying to come home at night and work on it.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, the thing is, you know, I keep going back to why I do illustration, which is to provide for my family. So in the end, I don't know. I don't see illustration as like this calling I need to fulfill, or man, I don't know if I had a different job. If I had a different job that was allowing me to provide, I don't know that I would feel the need mm-hmm. to work super hard at night to transfer to a different job.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I might do drawing for fun. I might write stories for fun when I felt that desire, but I don't know. It's not the work that satisfies me. It's the result.
Mm. I don't know if you're the same as me, but for me, the reason that I really wanted to make artwork was I knew that in being self-employed, there were no limits on my income. Mm. And I had come from a family where everyone had a limit to their income, you know? So it's like, well, we can't go on vacation until we save up a certain amount of money, which is going to take a certain amount of time. It's all calculatable and quantifiable. Mm-hmm. And this is, our life has to fit into this box because of these financial limitations. And I didn't like that, mm-hmm. you know? And I wanted to have the freedom to be able to start a business, to be able to start another business, to be able to work longer hours on multiple projects and break out of that financial limits of a job. And that's one reason why I really wanted it. Did that factor into your decision at all?
I think a big part of it is, if I weren't doing illustration, I would be doing something self-employed. Mm. I think that just appeals to my view of life. I like mm-hmm. the freedom of being able to say, hey, it's Wednesday. I'm not working today. We're going to go do something as a family mm-hmm. just because I'll shift the work over here. You know, I can look at my schedule and say, okay, I can fit in a free day here. Let's go do something. You know, I really love that freedom. But the big upside of illustration, as opposed to some other self-employed thing like plumbing or electrical work, would be that a lot of other jobs really have a trading your time for money mm-hmm. limit. And it's just that, you know, if I'm a plumber, I trade my time, I do something and you pay me. And I always have to be trading my time for that money. Mm-hmm. You know, unless I'm willing to hire other employees and grow it that way. But with illustration, I can create products and there's still a little bit of time trading, but I can own intellectual property that I can, you know, license and make mm-hmm. money for.
Speaking of that, you've done some Kickstarters, right?
I've done one successful Kickstarter.
Okay.
I've done two Kickstarters.
Was that Percival?
No, the successful one was Mortimer B. Radley.
That's right. Mortimer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mouthful.
Yeah. Mortimer Boo Radley.
But yeah, he's your little ghost, your ghost character, right?
Yeah. So right now I'm working on, kind of revamping that whole setting, mm-hmm. making it a little more visually pleasing to me, character mm-hmm. design wise, and, rethinking what the setting is. And then my goal is to take that and pitch that to publishers.
Oh. So it's like not self-published, but it could be an actual like right. series or something like that.
Yeah, because the great thing about it is that it's a mystery setting story. And mm-hmm. so it's really easy to then just keep writing new mysteries, you know. It can be a never-ending series, really, if I wanted it to.
Right. So I want to go back to this sort of this idea that you're saying, like, it could be any job for me, you know, for you, but it's illustration. So just to make sure I understand, it's like what happened here was you have the ability and you had the opportunity and you had some passion thrown in there as well, some interest, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to point out, like, that's where success lies at the center of those three circles, that Venn diagram. So you've got the passion, the opportunity, and the ability. And as soon as those all overlap and converge, that little part where they overlap, that's where your success is. And if there's more overlap, there's more success. And if there's less overlap, there's less success. And I feel like for me listening to you, it's like there was passion and ability, and those things kind of overlapped. You loved to draw and you had this ability. You clearly, as Will said, were, you know, ahead above some of the other students, and you definitely had, would you say, Will, he had the best work ethic out of all your students?
Oh yeah.
You know, so that counts for something. That counts for maybe more than raw talent, right? Work ethic. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm getting from you too, is like this incredible work ethic.
Well, one
but
thing
it that took would... time for that. It took time for that. The opportunity to kind of like that opportunity circle to kind of like overlap those other two things.
Yeah. And that oftentimes that can be completely out of your control, you know, especially when you're just starting out. I would say, Jake, you specifically had a huge impact on the opportunity for me, because I was posting to Instagram. I was doing things like that, but it was really quite small until I met you and we started interacting. Mm-hmm. And we interacted specifically on Instagram a few times, and that started really having a big impact on who was seeing my work.
How about all the times I said no to a job and said you should go check out this guy's work?
Yeah, that was helpful too.
Okay.
Yeah, that has been, I'd say that's been a really interesting aspect of my career. With Dungeon Mayhem, that card game for D&D, they contacted me and say, hey, they did the first set. I knew the artist who did the first set, Kyle Farron, who does awesome work, if you don't know him.
Yeah.
Then they emailed me and said, hey, we'd like you to do a follow-up deck. Mm-hmm. It's two characters. I was like, oh, that sounds great. I'd love to do it. I love games. I love this setting. I love fantasy. I'll do it. And they said, okay, we'll get back to you. And then they didn't get back to me. I was like, what's happening? And I emailed them. Said, hey, what is anything happening with this project? Oh yeah, we went with somebody else. Oh really? Bummer. Like, yeah, but we have something else that we want you to do. That's like monsters instead of heroes. It's like, okay, that sounds good. And then I find out, bam, it was you. You were the somebody else.
Yep. Oh, I snatched a job, but you ended up, I feel like, getting the better end of that whole deal, because I got two characters, you got like six characters to do.
Yeah, six characters. That's really a bigger fun boss.
yeah
it was a bullet dodged that you took from me, and I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. But the same thing happened with FarQuest, right? You were approached first.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't even read the first page. I just read the title and I was like, nope, not for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So no. that was a fortuitous circumstance for me, for sure. A fartuitous?
Fartuitous. That's right. No, I just don't think I had the bandwidth to take on 100 illustrations that particular. I had a podcast to do. I had like SVS stuff and my own comic that I was working on. So let me just get this straight. You are working on a board game, illustrations, you can't talk about it. You've got a fourth FartQuest book that you're working on, 100 plus illustrations. Mm-hmm. You have a Patreon that are you active on there? Or
I'm semi-active. I kind of use it as a, hey guys, don't expect too much.
Okay.
Here's some things I'll probably do.
You could, pay me anyway.
So I'll do quick podcasts. I'll do these little mini 10-minute, 12-minute podcasts where I just talk about something that I'm thinking about, whether it's business or art.
And what happened to, you had Choose Your Gnome Adventure.
Yeah.
What happened to that?
Choose Your Gnome Adventure went away when FartQuest came into being.
Okay.
It's just doing two of those books a year, which is what it's been it was just too much to do those. Mm-hmm. And then also a few other client projects that I needed to do. Mm-hmm. Choose Your Own Adventure had to take a hiatus.
Has there been an outcry from your fans?
Not an outcry, no. But some people are like, hey, when are you going to start this up again? Honestly, a character that gets the most talk from people online is this bunny barbarian Flopnar. The Flopnar,
I was going to say.
That was just one mini comic that I did. But anytime I post anything about that, people are like, oh, you're going to do more of this guy? I want to hear, you know.
So are you going to do more of Flopnar?
I've played through ideas, but nothing really is stuck on how I'd want to do.
Isn't that funny? It's like, this is the thing we want. We're actually telling you we want this. But as a creator, you're like, not feeling it.
Yeah.
No. Nope.
Yeah.
I'm going to go do this ghost thing.
Yeah, I guess the biggest hang up for me is more and more I want to... I'm really uncomfortable with glorified violence. Mm-hmm. In stories, we're going to get ethical here now.
Let's hear it.
Then we can talk about politics after that, if you'd like.
How about religion?
I'm yes, really curious what you think about this, because I've been kind of struggling with the violence thing too.
Yeah. So glorified violence to me, I'm done with it. I just, man, I don't want to teach anybody that violence is your way to solve a problem, because it's not. Mm-hmm. It never is. So, you know, a comic that is violent, but is teaching you the horror of violence and the negative consequences, that's a very different situation for me. That teaches something that I want taught. But, a movie or a story that's like, hey, this guy, we don't like him. We don't like his thoughts or his goals. We shall now punch him in the face. Mm-hmm. Mission accomplished. I just don't like that. So Flopnar, even that mini comic, was about the downside of violence. You know, the story goes of this Bunbarian coming to seek revenge for his father's death, and he beats up this ogre mole creature, and in doing so, he destroys a village, right? And then in the end, all the village people are mad because he just destroyed their village for some, you know, revenge desire. So I just don't know. The thing that I've toyed with that story was then to go on and make a story where he learns that violence isn't good. But I just don't know how to do that in a enjoyable way.
A non-didactic way, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like beating people over the head, pun intended there. Where violence is not bad.
Yeah.
I wonder, 'cause the thing I've been thinking too, it's like, gratuitous violence for just purely for like entertainment is something that I loved as a teenager.
Yeah.
You know, even in my 20s, but the older I get, I'm just like, you know, how many more like crushed heads and entrails do I need to see?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, right there with you.
Like surely there's gotta be a way to tell a story that doesn't lean.
It's like
so
you guys are fathers or something.
I wonder if it has to be like a father. It's a father thing. Like
it could be.
I love being able to read, a comic and having no hesitation handing it to my kid and be like, here, check this out. You're going to love it. And then us bonding over that thing. Mm-hmm. And there's so many cool comics that are mature, you know, rated mature that I wish, you know, it could be something that me and, you know, my preteen or my mid-teen and I could like really bond over. 'Cause you know, I've got the full spectrum of kids where it's like some kids can easily handle violence and it's no big deal. And other kids are like having bad dreams at night because of, you know, something they saw. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Okay. So I just want to, we're going to probably wrap it up here. What do you like? You're in this game now 8, 9 years, 2013. was when you quit everything and it really, you started to hit your stride after 6 years, right?
Seven-ish.
7 years. Okay, right on the deadline. Yeah. One more month and we'd be talking to Cam the plumber today.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious, can you, I know you don't like to plan too far ahead, but can you project what is the future of CAM look like in the next year, the next 5 years?
Well,
what
do
you, and not like predictions, but like, what would you like to accomplish?
Oh, what would I like to accomplish? Well, I don't like to plan far ahead, but I have most of the next year filled out.
Doesn't that feel good?
Yeah, that does.
It feels good.
It does feel good.
You can relax.
So yeah. Right now, if the client or if, you know, someone reaches out and is like, hey, we've got a project for you, your reply is, well, I'm booked until 2023.
It would depend on the size.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess my goals for the future, I would love to be doing more board game work.
Mm-hmm.
That takes up about half of what I'm doing. But I would love to be doing at least that much or more in the future. Mm. I just really enjoy that, that industry. Yeah. And I would love to be doing my own books. Mm-hmm. So it's enjoyable illustrating FartQuest. I love that, but I would also love to be telling my own stories, own characters. And actually FartQuest is great because it has given me that, it's helped me in that opportunity. Because through that process, I now have a literary agent, and so you know that's going to give me a step up in putting my own work out there.
Here's a question that everybody's wondering that you're not going to answer, and that is on that FartQuest series, how much are you getting paid?
Oh, I'll answer. Yeah. I am all about transparency. I believe the world needs more truth. I will tell you exactly how much I earn if you want, like. In
can
a
you
year.
Handle it, Jake? Can,
yeah,
can
let's hear it. Let's hear it.
I don't know if is am I like breaking any laws by saying what?
Well,
they paid
you
me?
Could be vague to an extent, but like I'm curious about royalties and stuff like that. You know,
And I'll say this too: like, employers, publishers, animation studios, game studios, they count on people not sharing this information a lot of times, so they can kind of. I think there's ways they could save money if people don't know how much other people are paying. And I say that because I was involved in a class action lawsuit in the animation industry where they were wage fixing. And I ended up getting a good sized check several years later because it was owed to me. I should have been paid more. Because all this, the animation studios kind of commiserated together and said, let's not pay anybody more than this certain amount.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you are pro transparency?
I am pro transparency. And I think too, and I saw this on Twitter and I thought it was brilliant. And I think I do it and I think everybody should do it. And what it is you have a salary partner. And what that means is you have a friend, confidant, trusted person who's at the same-ish level than you, as you, doing the same kind of career stuff as you. And every time one of you gets a deal, you tell the other person what you got. And that way you know, like, oh, this person got $20,000 for that? And I only got 15. I'm going to go back to him and say, hey, listen, I know you guys are paying 20,000. And I'd like to get that. And so it just kind of, I think helps protect you and helps keep everything like kind of working as it should be behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's all precursor to how I feel about sharing this kind of stuff.
I'm just trying to make sure I didn't sign something saying I wouldn't.
I know. If that's the case, you know, you can let us know and we'll edit it out.
Okay. Afterwards. I don't think I have. So they offered me 15,000 per book. I asked for 20. and they gave me 18. So I get an $18,000 advance on each book.
That's a little low, Cam. I'm thinking.
Well, to be honest, in the future, if they want to do more books, I would have to ask for more. It's pretty tight.
Well, and you're in a position to leverage that now.
Yeah,
which is great. So you gave them what they wanted. They also can make projections, and they know they can afford to pay you more. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's a win-win for everybody.
But it's been a great experience. I don't mean to down mm-hmm. them at all. I think it's been really good, and it's not through Macmillan. It is Roaring Brook Press, which I believe is a little bit smaller. And then I get royalties on top of that, which...
Isn't Roaring Brook an imprint?
It's an imprint of Macmillan.
Do you know how many books have sold? FartQuest books?
I think the last time I saw... Oh, I don't have it. I don't remember.
Okay.
I'm notoriously bad with numbers, like really, really bad. I can't remember numbers for some reason.
You and me both, my friend.
Think we had a conversation a while back and you asked me how old I was, and I just sat there and
froze
for a while.
I had to restart you.
Number? Two-digit number? Yeah.
That's cool.
It's over. I don't, you know, I'm going to say a ridiculous number. It's over 1,000.
That's for sure. Well, I think we're good here. Thanks for joining us, Cam. Yeah. Really appreciate it.
Great. It's been fun getting to know you over the years.
Oh yeah. I've thoroughly enjoyed my interactions with both of you throughout the years, for sure.
Likewise. And you know what? You know, the telephone works both ways. You can also make calls to me.
I know, but you know what? You did that video on YouTube once talking about social vampires. Uh-huh. Scared me.
Shoot.
Straight, man. I was just like,
just don't call during working hours. I'm just messing with you.
You scare me sometimes with that stare that you've got.
Yeah.
Is it still on your Kickstarter video?
I don't know. Oh, okay. See, I didn't know exactly. Yeah. It's still there.
If you guys want to see something that'll ruin your day, yeah, and possibly make you.
Is that the Kickstarter that didn't fund?
That's the one that didn't fund.
Okay, so here's what happened. Cam does this Kickstarter video for Kickstarter, which, spoiler alert, did not fund. But the video, tell us what the video is.
It's just me in a treehouse that I built. Staring into the camera for a while,
like for a minute,
and then I think I say maybe something. Maybe over a minute. I say something at some point.
I couldn't look away, and yet I was horrified.
Yeah.
So I got to say this though: if you're able to get, you know, the list of the people who did back that project in spite mm-hmm. of your video, or maybe because your video, those are your diehard true blue uh-huh. fans.
Well, like, here, let me name drop. Okay. Let it be known that when I released that, Scotty Young tweeted that that was the greatest Kickstarter video he had ever seen. Let it be known.
You're onto something.
And the second Kickstarter that did fund, it's just as weird of a video. I'm in the dark with a flashlight on my face doing weird.
That's right. I remember that.
It's weird.
It could be that you are avant-garde, like... Because and maybe actually quite brilliant now that I think about it, mm-hmm. because I for a long time had said Kickstarter videos are meaningless. You don't need them. Will also thinks the opposite. Like you absolutely have to have a good video. But I'm like, I'm like, you don't need the video. Nobody has time to sit through those videos anymore. And unless you do something like an animated short or something spectacular or super funny, you know, and there's a joke every second, every sentence mm-hmm. is humor, you're just going to waste people's time. And so for you to like roll up and make these like artsy you know, really pushing the boundaries videos, I think is a great like commentary on the whole Kickstarter situation there.
I can't help it.
That's right. Some people though, they need a video to back something, I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
It's like me.
That's probably true.
You don't deserve my funds unless you go through the pain of making a video.
This guy didn't make a video. I didn't make a video for the last Kickstarter I did. Last two. I helped my son with the Kickstarter. We didn't do. Oh no, we did do a video for him. But his was funny. It was, you know, quick edits, and it was his sort of humor that he's done. So, like I said, like, I think the most egregious thing you could do is bore people, keep it interesting, keep it funny, and you're good to go. Anyway, well, thanks, Cam. We'll let you go. It's been a good talk, and good luck with everything.
Thank you, boss. Talk to you later.
Bye. All right, thanks for joining us, everybody. 3-Point Perspective is brought to you by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. And your hosts today were Will Terry and Jake Parker. Lee White is our normal host, but he couldn't join us. But you could follow Will Terry at willterryart.com it's willterry.com, and it's on Instagram, Will Terry Art. My website is jakeparkerart.com, and you can follow me on Instagram at Jake Parker. And Lee White is Lee White Illo on Instagram and leewhiteillustration.com. If you liked what we talked about today, this interview with Cam, let us know your thoughts over at the SVS Learn forum. We've posted this interview in a thread, and you can join in on the conversation over there and let us know what you think. Let us know any insights you pulled from it, or anything you might have disagreed with what we said today. That'd be great. And then, as always, podcasts live and die by word of mouth, and we'd love it if you shared this podcast around, let people know about it. You can leave a review on the Apple Podcasts app, you know, give us 4 or 5 stars, whatever you think we deserve, and we would truly appreciate that. I think that's it, and we'll see you guys next time.